Good morning. Good to see everyone. This Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day to all of you who are mothers or have a mother. So it's spring, the leaves are green, the flowers are sweet. It's a bit like the heaven realm here in Minnesota in May. It's also a really busy time, I've noticed. It's packed. There's a lot of celebrations going on. And we had a very quiet celebration here yesterday. We had a small retreat. There were about eight of us. And we celebrated by sitting and walking inside and out and just getting quiet. Really quiet, like to the, and slowed down to the rate of the bunny who was munching leaves by the path where we were walking, unafraid of us. The quiet joy. Sure, is that better?
Yes.
Good. And can you hear in the other room? Great. Okay. Yeah, so May, can we just slow down? Take a slow walk and enjoy this beauty. So, the Wednesday night class is studying the Heart Sutra as a practice of wisdom beyond wisdom, of wisdom married to compassion, expressed as compassion. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about that and connect the practice of wisdom beyond wisdom to two mythical figures, the goddess Prajnaparamita and Avalokiteshvara, in he/she's many forms. So I'm going to read to you the translation that we're working with. We're working with a couple translations. So many of you know the one that we chant here, the version that goes Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva. When practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita, perceive that all five skandhas are empty and was saved from all suffering and distress. And it goes on. And there are a lot of no's in it. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no worries. Doesn't say that, but we'll get to that part. So I'm going to read you the translation, one of the other translations we're looking at. This one is by Kaz Ta-Nehisi and Joan Halifax. The Sutra on the Heart of Realizing Wisdom Beyond Wisdom. Avalokiteshvara, who helps us to awaken, moves in the deep course of realizing wisdom beyond wisdom, sees that all five streams of body, heart, and mind are without boundary and frees all from anguish. So this starts with Avalokiteshvara, the great bodhisattva in the pantheon of great bodhisattvas, who is practicing emptiness, who's moving in the deep course of emptiness, realizing wisdom beyond wisdom, and looking down at the suffering beings, and sees that these five streams, which Thich Nhat Hanh also calls the skandhas, five aggregates or heaps, as they're taught in early Buddhism, which are component parts that the Buddha used to teach an alternative view of the personality or the self. It's Buddha's schema, which say that these five skandhas are empty or without boundary and frees all from anguish, which Thich Nhat Hanh says ill-being, and our version says suffering. So seeing itself, seeing that these component parts of our personality, according to the Buddha, are empty of anything solid or fixed or lasting in an ultimate sense, are this is freeing. This is freeing for us. And the skandhas are form, which include the senses and the objects of the senses, and the rest are mental. Sensation, perception, formations, or volition, and consciousness. So this is briefly sensation or feeling is just what we're sensing right now in the body, in the mind, in the heart. Perception is naming, labeling, and judging that. And formation or volition is the impulse to do something, to act out of what we perceive and feel. Consciousness is then the awareness of all of it, of all of those functioning parts of ourself. So the fact that seeing, according to the Buddha, seeing these component parts, which are meant to free us from a sense of self, grasping at a sense of self as solid, that this is freeing. So this is the big news of the Mahayana. The big news of the Mahayana. What the early Buddhists, the Sarvastivadins, were doing by contemplating the skandhas and dharmas and dhatus and even the Four Noble Truths, the Mahayanas are saying, don't get stuck there, monks. Don't get stuck on those. Go beyond those. They're descriptions, like any descriptions. Like language, words and phrases. So now we should talk about the term emptiness, which Ta-Nehisi calls boundlessness, and I'm not sure because I didn't bring it what Thich Nhat Hanh calls it. I'm a little bit attached to our version that we chant here just because I've done it for so many years. So these other versions, like Ta-Nehisi's, I think are helpful to people who haven't chanted the other version for years and years. The other night in class, we chanted the Heart Sutra in Japanese with the drum, the mokugyo that we use here in the morning. And I'm not sure how that was for anyone else, but I thought it was great. And so did Bonnie Verban Kaur, but that's because we have that experience of chanting it in Japanese. And Suzuki Roshi, a friend of mine, Ken Ford, found this sort of booklet written by Suzuki Roshi, a copy of it. It was mimeographed, explaining some of our chants and dedications. And he said in there that, you know, it's not about the meaning. It's not about the meaning. The practice of reciting, the practice of chanting the Heart Sutra, which is the shorthand version, the cliff notes, the very dense version of the Prajnaparamita in 8,000 lines. So emptiness, or shunyata in Sanskrit, is actually not a scary, depressing void. It's the good news, the liberating news. But Westerners don't like the term. We associate it with sadness or meaninglessness or despair. Often people do. So there are even stories in the tradition about the people hearing this for the first time, some of them having heart attacks and dying because it was so shocking to them that, that themselves and all phenomena are empty. So the symbol, the zero and the enso, you've seen the ensos, the circles that are not quite closed. That's a symbol of infinite possibility rather than nothingness. So, whereas Thich Nhat Hanh would call it, we're empty because we inter are. we're so deeply interconnected, interpenetrated with each other, with all things, all living things, that that we can't find anything solid and ongoing. So it's simply central to the message is that of going beyond limited ideas of the self, identifying with those ideas, or a belief in that in the ego operating system, or a central controller, which we tend to get caught up in that. So they were taught as a schema for breaking down the personality into component parts to free us of this idea of that there's this ego operator kind of controlling everything. So Avalokiteshvara only appears once, kind of as a little bit of a higher power looking down onto the human world, seeing the suffering, hearing the cries of the world. And he, she is a symbol of the centrality of compassion and the teachings of emptiness. I'll pass around some photos of different little cards that show Avalokiteshvara. This is a Chinese version, Kuan Yin, from the 12th century, the Water Moon Kuan Yin. This is, I'm not sure where this image originates from, but it looks Tibetan, doesn't it? Looks that, like that. And on the back, here's a modern day Avalokiteshvara, a mom or a dad, using all the tools at their disposal to multitask, take care of kids, cook, clean, etc. So I'll just pass those around. So there are so many versions of Avalokiteshvara. There's just too many to even mention. But there's some interesting ones. They cast light on this interplay between the absolute and relative aspects of compassion. So the absolute is to see all of us as empty of ill-being, as innately pure, innately bright, innately light, to cultivate seeing all beings that way. But to ignore the world of human want and suffering is dry. You know, it's the world of animals. The earth herself would be cold. So we need both types. So shunyata, the Sanskrit for emptiness, helps us to cool down, to rest in space, to experience the mind of sky, the blue sky over Lake Calhoun. And that's freeing. It cools the fires of the afflictive states of mind that come and go and come and go. Yesterday, Wanda, in her talk, talked about the five hindrances. So when we study the self in Buddhism, she said, we should look for those five hindrances, because if we're not experiencing nirvanic peace, they'll be there in some form or another. So seeing the hindrances is a necessary part of studying the self. And retreats give us a chance, an extended chance, to do that on the cushion, without the distractions of everyday life and the busyness of everyday life. So, when we can clearly see the five hindrances as empty, we see them, we note them, we know they're there, then we let them go. We let them drop off. That's nirvana. That's cooling the self. So that's studying the self and dropping off the self. Then compassion naturally arises, according to the teaching. And the Buddha used metaphors for the self, such as a burning house. So in order to understand the situation of our consciousness, of what's coming and going in our minds, including the hindrances or the kleshas, we need to understand our mental conditioning, our patterning, which, when acted out, cause us pain, cause us suffering. So we can use images like the self as a burning house, including desire and clinging, ill-being, dullness. So we can see how important it is to not wait until someday to practice. Not wait till someday to wake up. And the greed and hatred and ignorance we see in the world, in our leaders sometimes, politicians, is also in us. And that habit energy is strong. It's something to respect and sit with it and work with directly. So studying the self is seeing that arising very clearly. But on the other side of it, the Chinese used a character, the character of sky, as a translation for shunyata, or forgetting the self. Sky. I think of the dakinis. Dakinis are these feminine figures. They call them sky dancers, associated with that aspect. So there's a goddess figure called the mother of all Buddhas, Prajnaparamita. And she dates back to the first century, the common era in India. Not a historical figure, but a symbolic embodiment of true seeing of prajna. And I believe that figure in our backyard is Prajnaparamita. Looks just like the images I've been seeing. Do you know, Tim?
Yeah.
That's Prajnaparamita. I don't know if, can we see her hand mudra? The mudra, the position of her hands. That's what tipped me off, because the mudra or the figure for a Prajnaparamita figure is, it looks a little bit like this, like the turning of the wheel, like she's turning a wheel. And she's associated with the second turning of the Dharma. They have one at Clouds and Water Zen Center too. They have a large Prajnaparamita. So when Joanna Macy, the beloved Buddhist environmentalist, was in what she called a dreary spell, studying the Abhidharma, she encountered this mother of all Buddhas, Prajnaparamita, who, as she says, nursed the Buddhas to life, nursed them to enlightenment. And learning about the goddess perked her up. Apparently she wasn't too excited about learning about the monks debating and analyzing the component parts of existence. Macy imagines the goddess breaking into these debates saying, "Just stop it! You can't break free by dissecting the self into its component parts." So sunya, which is the Pali for emptiness, became one of her names. Macy says, in this fashion, she brought forth in new words the Buddha's central teaching, the dependent co-arising of all phenomena. That's why her sutra became known as the second turning of the wheel. And the Heart Sutra negates those dharmas, no eyes, no ears. It negates the Four Noble Truths, the 12-fold chain of causation, all the Buddhist teachings. So in other words, there's no rafts to the other shore of enlightenment. No shore, no enlightenment. Let go of it all. gone, gone, gone beyond is the mantra at the end of the Heart Sutra. She says, we can all be bodhisattvas, seeing the emptiness of existence, seeing others as ourselves, and opening to the world as our own hearts. It can be scary, of course, to discover that there's no separate self or private salvation, she said. That's why over and over the mother of all Buddhas says, have no fear. So you see the gesture for have no fear on many of the Buddha and Bodhisattva statues, right? That's that gesture, have no fear. And giving non-fear is considered to be one of the best things to be generous with. Bestowing non-fear. So how can we give that in this world today, here and now? That's the koan, I think. That's a koan for our time, is how can we do that? How can we manifest that as bodhisattvas in training ourselves? So the other figure, the great figure, is Avalokiteshvara, as Kanzion, called the cry regarder, one who hears the cries of the world. There's a really nice image of her, one that I feel drawn to, that I need. It helps me to remember to rest. It's called Kuan Yin in the Royal Ease Posture, and I believe they have that at the MIA. I think so. Yeah, you can go there and see it. It's a large statue. And I really appreciate that one for my own personal practice, is to be remembered to rest deeply. Be reminded to rest deeply. You know? So sometimes it's difficult to listen when we're too tired, when we're too stressed. We need to rest deeply so that we can listen to our own cries and to the cries of the world. There are other figures that show a different kind of compassion from the receptive, empathetic compassion of Kanon and Kuan Yin. And one of those is considered to be Mahakala, a big, fierce guy with kind of a black face, and he's looking really scary. He's a Tibetan figure, but he's basically a guardian spirit. He's protecting with his fierceness. There's an 11-headed Avalokiteshvara. The heads are kind of stacked, and there are heads facing forward and heads facing from side to side. And the faces in front look very sweet and kind. But some of the ones facing towards the side and the back look really fierce again. So that's like a stern, you know, like the mother or father who has to prevent harm for their child, who has to set a boundary. So who are your greater bodhisattvas? People that you think of in this world that are emanations of Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of wisdom and compassion. Think about that. In the discussion, you can talk about it. So Joanna Macy is definitely one of mine, as is the Dalai Lama, who, when you see him or pictures of him, he's often leaning forward. And he looks very kind, but he's also very intently listening. He's a great listener, and he's actually considered to be officially a reincarnation of Avalokiteshvara. And so is Bodhidharma, believe it or not. He's considered an emanation of Avalokiteshvara. And for me, Thich Nhat Hanh is quite the Avalokiteshvara figure. And my stepdaughter, Marga, she has great kindness and fierce compassion. She takes in rescue dogs. The house is full of them. And she's very loving, but, you know, sets good boundaries, pretty stern when she needs to be with her kids. So how do we cultivate compassion and wisdom together? The wisdom that sees emptiness, the wisdom that sees that has no doesn't attribute any negative motivation to you or to me or to anyone, that sees purely. How do we do that? That's my question. That's my koan. We ask a lot of questions. We don't always give all the answers. It can be frustrating, but it's important to sit with the questions themselves. So one of the ways that I like to put myself in that spacious state of mind is through poetry and song. One of the things we did at the women's retreat at Hokyoji a week ago was, I would call it an Avalokiteshvara practice, Kuan Yin practice of regarding the cries. We sat in a circle and we each thought of someone in our lives that is suffering in some way, and we named them and put them in a circle, and then we sang some songs for them. And the first song is a song about being well and happy. So affirming that, yes, every single one of us had one or two or three people who are suffering quite deeply, and yet each one of us got ourselves there. And we're well enough to be there. And so we sang, first to affirm that, before we sang songs for those that are ill. So I wonder if you want to hear a song, or maybe even learn a song.
Sure.
Are you up for that? If there's about 10 of you, we could do it. This is a song I do. I sing to put myself in that space of spaciousness. And I'll sing it through, and then you could sing it with me, and we could sing it three times. Three times. Three is a symbolic number in our tradition. So it goes like this. Let's do it call and response. I do a line, and then you do it back to me. And then after we're done with that, we'll sing it a couple more times together. I think that works better. Okay, it goes like this. In my body, no fear. In my body, no fear. In my body, safety. In my body, safety. In my body, greatest happiness. In my body, greatest happiness. In my body, deep peace. In my body, deep peace. In my body, no fear.
In my body, no fear.
In my body, safety.
In my body, safety.
In my body, greatest happiness. In my body, greatest happiness, in my body deep peace, my body deep peace. Okay, one more time all together, not call and response. In my body no fear, in my body safety, in my body greatest happiness, in my body deep peace. Thank you. And I have a poem to end with. It's called Let Be. When we let things be as they are, the river of kindness rises to the surface of our lives. One sip and the spirit is renewed. Drink again. Drink deeply. That water will flow in your veins and you will become fearless. Free to care about others the way you care about your hands and feet. That's Krishna Das. He likes to sing too, also, and chant. So that's the kind of compassion, that arises spontaneously, like reaching back for your pillow in the middle of the night, like a mother responding to her child, or a father responding to his child, just automatically. So that's all I have to say today. It's brief. But now you could say some things, if you like.
That card you sent around with the sun, moon, bodhisattva, was it?
Guanyin.
Has the posture with one knee up and one knee down.
Yeah, there is a significance to that, and I'm not recalling it. I just read about it. Yeah.
Well,
do you know it?
I don't know the meaning of it, but when I first started practicing here, I was pregnant. And I was doing a session, and I was having a really hard time physically with it.
Uh-huh.
And Kadhiri Roshi gave me that posture to use.
Putting one knee up.
And apparently, I thought, because I was pregnant, so I mentioned it because it's Mother's Day.
Right.
And I saw that
right.
Yeah. With that posture before, and it just brought back that memory of him giving me that posture when I was so uncomfortable, and it helped me a great deal.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's great. It's like Agnes's posture right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Another Mother's Day thought.
Uh-huh.
So the material stuff of our bodies comes out of the earth,
mm-hmm.
and our consciousness is somehow rooted in this body, and we think we're separate, but we're really part of the earth walking around on its surface.
Mm-hmm.
Last month, there was a workshop in engaged Buddhism led by indigenous teachers primarily, but also practitioners from Clouds and Water. One of the indigenous teachers was Jim Baird Jacobs, who was Mohican.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the fact that it is within the body of the mother that this sacred and inexplicable merger between our material bodies and our consciousness takes place.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Beautiful. She needs to hear it again.
It's within our bodies that
the merger between
this sacred and inexplicable merger between our physical bodies and our consciousness takes place.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
I know I'm feeling a little emotional, so bear with me for a minute. But when I think of Mother's Day, and I think of my mother, I think of that beautiful gift that has been bestowed upon women to bear life, to care. And so, like, I think of love and realizing that that act of love, which is, you know, giving of yourself, that compassion, loving somebody no matter what, no matter how ugly they can be, how beautiful they can be, that's true love, you know, that true acceptance of that being, that entity. And I feel like as a woman and two mothers in this space, I so appreciate it because the love that you've given to all of us, we won't be here because if it wasn't for you. I just wanted to put that into the space. But I think the true act of love, I learned from my mother, and I understand what it means to truly love something from my mother and my planet.
Yeah, your first teacher.
It's beautiful, and I've been waiting for this one.
All right. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I have a friend who's part of this organization that called Ten Moons that sponsors research and teaching on life prenatally and birth education. She sent a video, and it showed, the video is just scene after, it was the same scene, but different mothers, different babies, and partners, dads, and all kinds of partners, you know, that were other moms that were there at the moment of birth. It showed the moment of birth over and over again. Most of these women were in water. Most of them were sitting up, not lying down. And the incredible expression of emotion, it was just so strong at each one. And also this look of utter empowerment on the women's faces, you know, just joy and lots of feeling, but just utter empowerment. And at the moment of taking up the infant, you know, and holding it, it was really beautiful to see that. And I thought it was interesting that it's probably because it's Mother's Day that she sent it around. So Tim says that, you know, Buddhism is the papa and Taoism is the mama, but I'm saying today, Buddhism has the mama, too. the great mother is in Buddhism, too. So, any other comments or sharing? Or yes?
Thank you for bringing in the other translations. Like you, I get stuck on the one that I know. But sometimes it really helps to hear a different translation of a different section.
Yeah.
Really invigorates the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for listening.
You're welcome, yeah. Oh, good. Okay, you're welcome. I never know whether people really want to hear those songs. But as long as there's one or two of you... Okay, so thank you.